he said it seems clear that magnetic field consists in particles which have mechanical characteristics, and these particles might be moving at the speed of light within the magnetic field. And for the comparison, I'm going to give you the example of gyroscope. And the gyroscope actually consists from mechanical power. If you try to bend the axle of the spinning flywheel of the gyroscope downwards, it moves in the opposite direction, and upwards it moves in the direction that is trying to keep the vertical pattern towards the earth. So my understanding is that if we compare these two behavior of the current that is in between magnetic fields and behavior of the gyroscope, then we might come really to the conclusion that a kinetic energy exists within the pool of two magnets. At that point, any kind of the perpetual motion might be possible, just because of the fact that there is not only the potential energy. Another question that I have is, you have two magnets with the same poles and they're in vertical position, and 3 years later you come and they are exactly apart, one from the other, at the same position, and 3 years later they have the same position. Question is, does the conventional science standing that potential energy is the energy of magnetic field and there is no kinetic energy is true for it, but two.
Only way to VDH with a comment.
Okay, Greg. Point of order first. Eric, go ahead. Are we timing out the machine a lot of times tonight? Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I want you to take a pause for about 2 minutes while I make some adjustments.
Okay, VDH, we'll get back to you. Stand by. You got it, Eric.
Thank you, Dick.
Okay, we're back on. Out of curiosity, Eric, would we be interested in knowing what changes you just made, and whether or not you want to tell us is up to you. And to KE2EJ, K2LIW.
Oh, I'm adjusting some timings and stuff. I'm trying to keep the rest of the folks from getting blown off, but the controller's not cooperating very well at the moment, and I don't know exactly why it accepts certain commands and doesn't accept other commands, but I'll figure it out.
But are they correct in assuming, and Andy's given me a little hint of this, that your guys are about to establish an RF link between east and west, and therefore the IRLP, or Echo Link, delay of the internet, that extra delay is about to be removed, and therefore the amount of time we have to wait after the beep in order to not get things into the reset mode, I think you're saying I believe that that's about to improve sometime in the near future. Is that approximately correct, Eric? Go ahead.
No, actually, what I'm doing is actually making the beep wait a little longer because, you guys actually clip on the end of the beep, which is just, I made it barely enough time. I also have another timer that times on the IRLP and the Echo Link output, but because you guys just jump on it immediately, I have to make the whole thing longer. Because what happens is, you're using a controller that has multiple ports, and when the beep happens and you guys jump on it within the next millisecond, actually a lot of people don't let the beep even finish, the next port over, because it's too fast for the processor and the controller, doesn't see that, doesn't drop the COS line, and then, I wind up with a cascade failure. Tonight, it has actually happened 6 times so far.
Yeah, I'm a little bit afraid you're going to tell me that I did at least 4 of those. Oh, well, we'll try. The system is slowly going to get better. Our models of the universe are slowly going to get better, and this repeater system is slowly going to get better. Andy and Eric and Bernie are all working on that. When it comes to magnetic, it's awful fascinating that you can never have a unipolar magnetic. magnet. But when it comes to an electrostatic charge, it can be unipolar. You can have a point charge that's positive, a point charge that's negative, or neutral. So you can have a unipolar point charge, but all magnetic devices are bipolar. And you can go into a bunch of guesses as to why Mother Nature set it up that way. And there are people who think that a changing magnetic field near a wire by some means pushes the electrons in that wire. And the number of electrons in that wire is just something that's out of sight. Let me drop. The example that I sometimes use is on a cold winter morning. You turn the key on your automobile and 200 amperes or more flows into that starter motor. Sometimes it hits a lock current, peak current of maybe 400 amperes, but a lot of current flows out of that battery into that starter motor. And if you could watch one single electron leaving the battery, going into that wide copper cable, going down that cable and over to the starter motor, on average, that electron would take 4 hours to get there. Of course, you couldn't run your starter motor that long. You'd burn it up, and your battery wouldn't work that long. But if it could, if Mother Nature would let you unbalance that copper cable, she forces balance. Every time you take one electron out of the far end at the starter motor, she insists that you put one in to this pipe full of electrons. And at the near end, you're going to keep it balanced at all times. But if she would allow you to create an imbalance and allow you to drain the freely movable electrons that are in that copper cable that goes between your battery and that starter motor, you could get 200 amperes out of there for 4 solid hours. Something like 10 to the 19 electrons flowing past one point in 1 second is 1 ampere. Multiply that by 200, multiply that by the number of seconds in 4 hours, and you have some idea of the total number of electrons that are in that 3-foot-long piece of copper tape, copper blade, that's between your battery and that starter motor. That's a huge number. I'm not sure exactly what it is. It's probably something like 10 to the 23 power. One with 23 zeros after it is the number of electrons. Rough approximation.
Don't forget to tell that some of these electrons in the center are very lazy.
Yeah, I'm talking about on average. On average, that red electron coming out of the battery right now, he's dancing all over the place. Let me drop long enough. And he's dancing all over the place. And on average, he takes 4 hours to get there. From the time your solenoid closes at the starter motor, the speed of light is roughly 1 nanosecond per foot. So if you had a current, very fast current sensing scope probe at the battery end, in 3 nanoseconds from the time the solenoid closes, that current is already flowing at the other end of the cable from the battery. So the marble that jumps out of the pipe at the far end, at the solder motor, creates another one going into the pipe at the near end, and there's a zillion electrons in that pipe. So the effect of the current turning on is sensed at the other end in 3 nanoseconds. But it takes 4 hours for that guy to get there. By the same token, you'd be amazed how many people think that with 60 cycle power, they think that there is some number of electrons that flow from the power company through the wires to their house on the positive half cycle, and on the negative half cycle of the 60 cycle current, those electrons go back to the power company. A lot of people think that. You really analyze that situation, and you realize that all of those electrons that are in that pipe that you and I call wire, in between your power company and your house, those electrons are dancing back and forth at a 60 cycle rate, and they probably only move not even a thousandth of an inch on each half cycle of the 60 cycles, and we can calculate that one. So there's a bunch of marbles in that pipe jiggling back and forth an extremely small distance, and that is the 60 cycle power. On top of that, here's one more crazy fact for you. Assume I...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Okay, looks like we're back in operation. Any idea what happened there, Eric?
Yeah, I was just asking you if you heard anything on the input.
There was no steady carriers on the input. I just heard you ask me twice, am I hearing anything?
Yeah, we disconnected all the links. It was, you know, local to the 8-5 machine.
Okay, are we back in operation, and was I clipping the tail again?
Yeah, well, it timed out, but I don't know why. I mean, it wasn't anything I was doing.
Okay, I hear you. The one last crazy piece of information I was going to give you guys is assume I've got the 50-volt battery. Ordinarily, you put your two hands between the wires of a 50-volt battery, and you're going to feel some current flowing through your hands. Not too uncomfortable amount of current, but you'll feel it. Common sense would lead you to believe that there's 50 volts from this battery, in my example. Electrons are flowing down that wire, and the positive lead is touching your left hand, and the negative lead is touching your right hand. You would assume that those electrons flowing out of the battery down that copper wire then flow through you, the human being, and they'll go back to the other wire and back to the battery. Good common sense. That ain't what happens. Those electrons flow down the wire and create a potential difference at the point of contact of your hands. Essentially, no electrons flow through your body. Ions flow through your body. If I decided to just take just the salt solution that's in your blood supply, and I only talk about the salt right now, and the salt is in solution, let me drop. By definition, a salt solution would consist of sodium ions and chloride ions. Sodium chloride is salt. The sodium ions are flowing in one direction. The chloride ions are flowing in the other direction, caused by the potential difference of your hands clamped around those two wires. Are there electrons that flow through your body? Not really. Electrons flow through that wire up to your point of contact. Then there are ions with positive and negative charge on them flowing through your body. And that's what you sense as a current flow. Now, do the electrons actually leave the wire and go into your body to push those ions? There, I'm not clear. I ain't sure what happens at that intersection. But maybe Eric, I'm going to ask Eric that one. Eric, what do you think is happening at that intersection? KE2EJ, then we're going to go over back to Wesley. KE2EJ, K2LIW. Okay, he's probably busy.
What do you want, Dick?
I'm saying that no electrons flow through the human being when you touch two wires. The electrons flow through the wire up to the human being, and only ions, positive and negative ions, flow through the human being. Do any of those electrons at the intersection of wire and human hand, are any electrons going across that junction that excite the ions that flow through the human being? Over to you, Eric.
Well, real quickly run that by me again, because I'm listening to too many things at once.
Okay, the copper wire coming out of the battery has electrons flowing through it. I've got my two hands across the two wires, the positive and negative wire coming out of this battery. Essentially, none of those electrons flow through me. Only ions, positive and negative ions, like sodium and chloride ions, flow through me. The chloride ions flow in one direction and the sodium ions flow in the other direction. So ions are flowing through me. Electrons are flowing through the copper wire. At the intersection of copper wire and my hand, are any electrons moving at that intersection? KE2EJ, KE2LIW.
You know, that's an interesting question. And, I mean, are you going to answer the question whether electrons actually move through the wire, or they just jump orbits from one atom to another? I mean, what definition do you want to give it?
Well, one interesting thing is that if you have two pieces of wire between you and you hold in your hands, then the flow of electrons appears to be from both sides.
I accept that. Yeah, I'm going to call electrons flowing through a copper wire as a flow. Yes, they are jumping from one orbit to the next orbit, from one copper atom to the next copper atom. They are jumping those outer shells. I'm going to call that flow. But at the intersection of copper wire and hand, I'm not sure electrons flow. I think the potential difference sensed by the contact of the hand on the copper wire in turn creates a flow of positive and negative ions inside of the human being. I'm right now not positive that any electrons flow from the copper wire into the human being. But yet, in the theory, they sort of have to, because current is, 1 ampere is Avogadro's number flowing through 8 point in the, not Avogadro's number, 1.9, here we go, 10 to the 19 electrons flowing from across a point is, that's 1 ampere, yes. So, 1 ampere is flowing of electrons
from the battery.
And, yeah, from the battery through the copper wire, 1 ampere of current is flowing. Is those electrons of that current flowing into...
What happens inside the battery?
I think the battery is a pump that's taking electrons from the positive lead, pushing them to the next...
Traveling through what kind of a medium?
Oh, ions there. So the electrolyte of the battery has ions flowing. Oh, so we don't even have electrons per se flowing through the battery. Only have ions flowing between those plates. Up to you, Eric.
Okay, well, I mean, that's one possible answer, isn't it, now?
Okay, so we've got ions flowing in the battery, electrons flowing through the copper, and ions flowing through the human being. What's happening at the intersection of copper wire and hand of human being? Are electrons flowing there?
Ah, what's happening between the piece of carbon in the, if you want to use carbon or you want to use lead, I mean, you want to use some conductive material, then, you know, we can even go into semiconductors with it. What makes the transition from an ion flow, per se, to a piece of copper, which is a metal, okay? I mean, are we moving electrons out of the orbit of one substance into the orbit of the next substance and then changing the entire chain of charge along the way?
Okay, if I was running the battery backwards and I was charging it at the negative electrode inside the battery, positive ions gather at that point, they pick up an electron, they become neutral, and they place themselves onto that plate. And the opposite is happening on the other side. So ions are moving,
but it's not just the ion in that case, it's the entire atom, isn't it?
You got it. So that high, that entire chloride or sodium atom picks up or gives up an electron, turns from an ion into an atom, and is electroplated onto that plate. Did current flow through that battery? That's not an easy one to answer, is it?
No, I remember, like, Voltaire had an equation as to how that transition occurred, and he actually, I think he laid it out as far as molar weight of material.
So once again, Eric, who laid that out as molar weight of the material? Yes. X number of amperes is X number of moles of weight of material that has been transported through the electrolyte of the battery, and those two different ions get coated onto those two different plates. And so I think you're telling me if I know the current of the charging of the battery, I know the number of grams of material that have been deposited on the plate. I think that's what you're saying. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I think that was originally laid out by Voltaire, if I'm not mistaken. I could be mistaken. I actually have to look, but, you know, I'm just digging in the back of my mind here.
Okay. Is there the equivalent of positive and negative plates between my left hand and my right hand that's in contact with those copper wires? Is there electroplating of those ions going on inside of the skin of my body? Over to you, Eric.
All right, let's take it the opposite direction. If you take a millivolt or a microvolt meter, and in one hand you put a nickel, and in the other hand you put a penny, what does that meter read?
It's going to read the so-called electromotive series, the difference in voltage between those two. Assuming my hands are salty and I'm making good contact with those two pieces of metal, I'm going to measure an electrostatic voltage difference between the two.
Electrostatic?
Well, it's not an AC voltage. It is, I better not say it. I'm going to measure a steady state voltage in that millivolt meter, and I am the electrolyte that's supplying the juice that makes that minuscule battery work. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're going to find that that your skin not only contains oil, but it's slightly acidic.
Okay, so I can make myself into a battery. How long will that happen? In other words, almost every battery runs down. When my human battery in that experiment you just described runs down, what happens? Are the plates now, is there no longer any material that can be electroplated off my body onto those pieces of metal?
Well, now you've made it a more complex issue, because the body is an engine of sorts, and because it has fuel and the enzymes continue to manufacture stuff in it, as long as you're holding on to those things and you're alive, even after you're dead for a little while, you'll still generate juice, because you're still generating a very, very, very weak acid.
Boy, am I electromotive. Am I charged? Now, when you start operating with super high voltages, like in this experiment that Wesley brought to my attention, or was it Alex? I'm not sure now. Yeah, I think it was Wesley brought to my attention. I've been experimenting over the last couple of years on and off with a Wim Hof machine and with a Van de Graaff generator, where I can generate easily 150,000 volts. And I made the mistake of taking my favorite digital multimeter and leaving it within 5 feet on the table where these experiments are going on. And because that digital multimeter has a 10 megohm input impedance, even though I didn't bring any of the leads anywhere near the experiment going on, it picked up enough voltage to wipe out the low noise preamp on the front end of that digital multimeter. And for me to find the schematic diagram of my favorite digital multimeter, yeah, a smart guy would just lay down another $150 and buy another one. But I've got pride. I want to fix that one. And I can't get a schematic diagram of my favorite digital multimeter. And that's making me a little bit unhappy. I wonder if you've ever run into anything like that there, Eric. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I got sidetracked again. Run that by me one more time, quick. K2RW, K2J.
My very nicely made 4.5-digit digital multimeter got subjected to an electrostatic field 5 feet away from my Van de Graaff generator, and it got wiped out. And so to get the schematic diagram of my Southeast Asia manufactured 4.5-digit true RMS digital multimeter, I'd love to have the schematic in order to be able to fix it. The owner's manual didn't supply one. I can't find it on the website. I think I'm going to have to give up and just write a check and make the problem go away. Over to you, Eric.
Now, if you're talking about a fluke, you can actually get servicemen for them. I've had to. You know, my transmitter room, we do get whacked by lightning a lot. And I sometimes lose stuff. I've actually lost a really good multimeter that was sitting on a table. And it wasn't even on, but it did have an FET in it for them.
When I was finishing my talking about the comparison between the gyroscope and the two magnets with the coil on it, there was somebody who wanted to take a stand, and which we completely forgot about it.
DDH. Yeah, go ahead, John. John from Roosevelt, go right ahead with your question, then we'll go back to Wesley. You got it, John.
Okay, fine. This is. I just wanted to address the question about Lenz's law about why the current seems to always know which way to go. In that, if it in fact went the other way, this is the way I can explain to myself. Is that if it went the other way, then you would have a condition where you would accelerate. In other words, you take a loop of wire, push it over a magnet. Take a loop of wire and push it over a magnet, and the loop of wire would accelerate onto the magnet, push itself onto the magnet, generating still more current. So the current it induces in the loop has to oppose the direction that you're pushing it into to make things work out so you don't get overusity. Go ahead.
That seems reasonable. So that's one possible explanation. And maybe Wesley can accept that. Let's find out. N2XJM, K2LIW in the group.
Okay, well, when I started this discussion, I carefully started this discussion from the Tesla button from 1888, and there was the transfer of the electricity over the air, and Dick was able to review that video from the Dr. Peter Lindemann first, when he was youngster, first experiment, and then I slowly moved to how the current knows how to find the direction flow, and then I compared this to a gyroscope, and gyroscope reacts exactly the same way as the current does. You can push it one way, it always gonna find it the vertical. What I'm trying to say at the end, that was Mr. Newman, who in the 80s was actually able to build the first device that shows the over unity, and actually this device was tested many times, and this guy ended up in being very poor. Just my understanding is that it's something that is unexplained to me. If the transfer energy of the air is possible, and I would appreciate if based on Tesla invention, if Dick will take a comment on it, then why are we still using the wire? Back to you, and the cancer chair.
My first guess with wires is that it's very easy to put meters on the wires, and I know that I've given Wesley 10 kilowatt hours, and I know that I've given Alex 15 kilowatt hours, and I know that Dick used that 25 kilowatt hours. So with the wires and with the meters, I know. If I'm sending the power through the air, if I had a way of sending the power through the air, it is a lot more difficult to find out of all the power I'm emitting at my power station. It's not so easy for me to figure out how much went to Wesley, how much went to Alex, and how much went to Dick. So that's one factor. Second of all, copper wires can conduct electrical potential, current, voltage, whatever, can conduct it extremely well. Air can also conduct power by way of a focused radial energy, or by way of ionic wind of high voltage, by arcing over the air. There's various ways that I can get power to flow through the air. So let me drop. But everything that I've seen to date tells me that air, as a medium, has a lot of loss when you transmit power through it. And if I was doing it into outer space, I can transmit a radio signal, I can transmit a laser beam, I can transmit light wave. There's various ways that I can transmit energy in empty, hard vacuum space. But every method I use for generating it must follow the inverse square law. Every time I double the distance between that emitting device and my receiving device, every time I double the distance, I get one quarter the amount of energy per unit time. And at times that's very difficult to live with. Whereas with copper wire, it's a linear relationship, not square law. So I've got selectivity as to where the power is going. I can differentiate how much people have used, and I get rather low amounts of loss when I use copper. Yes, the copper is a pain in the neck. I've got to pay for it, I've got to install it, I've got to maintain it. But after that, I get the benefit. Air has got some serious disadvantages, and to transmit a lot of power through air appears to be very difficult. And although Tesla believed he's going to come up with some kind of a breakthrough to do it, and his backers sort of believed him at first, I think all of the experiments that have been done over all of those decades and centuries have proven that power through air is very small and lossy.
You know about the NASA proposal, right?
You're talking about solar power satellites, Eric?
Yeah.
Yeah, I studied the solar power satellites. And back in roughly 1980, the proposal was it's going to take $2 trillion in 1980 money to establish the satellites. And that's just establishing them. And because they were going to be in synchronous orbit, and you can only get to a small fraction of that altitude with the space shuttle, you cannot maintain them. So it's a very expensive installation, and you can't maintain them very easily. You can't go there to repair them. And so that's a very open-ended, very expensive project. I would much rather see them put solar voltaic cells across half the state of Arizona, through half the Sahara Desert, and half of Australia, and then connect it all together so you get total power all 24 hours a day. That project would be 1% of the price of solar power satellites.
I represent a different opinion.
I'll get to your opinion in a second. So, on the surface, solar power satellites, on paper, they look very desirable. You get down to the specifics, it's expensive and hard to maintain, and it might not be the best way to go,
and it don't produce all that much power either.
That's also true. So, with today's technology, it might not be the best bang for the dollar. But maybe Alex has got a better way. Wait for the beep. You got it, Alex.
It was Wesley.
If you heard one European, you've heard them all. I keep confusing you guys. Please forgive me. You got it, Wesley.
Okay. With 1 watt of power, you can make the QSO with very far away DX station. Did you notice the significant loss of power between you and me while I'm transmitting? Okay. And talking about the free energy. Well, before we go to solar panels. Efficiency of solar power is 17% average. The efficiency of gasoline is around 30%. The rest of it is the waste through the heat and friction. Maybe that explains why the Tesla was ruined by J.P. Morgan when he announced to him that he wants to deliver the power to everybody, because it's hard to put the meters on it. Back to you, Dick, and to XJF.
Yeah, when you're sending me a radio signal, Wesley, you transmit lots of power, and I receive pico watts of power 30 miles away. And that those pico watts of power that I get are enough, because I'm using something called a radio receiver, because the radio receiver has 120 decibels of gain in between the antenna and that loudspeaker. 120 decibels of gain. I'm willing to pay to put in all of those amplifiers. I'm willing to put in the battery power and whatever to run those amplifiers in order to get that minuscule signal that gets from you to me, and therefore that communication. I'm willing to pay that price. However, if you were trying to transmit radio power from Queens, and you're trying to send that radio power over to me in Huntington, the amount that I get is so darn small. And by the way, Wesley, in order for me to know how to carefully aim my antenna, are you on the east side of Andrews Avenue or the west side of Andrews Avenue? And do you own a four-door black automobile? Over to you, Wesley.
No, I do not own a four-door black automobile. That's first. And I'm on the left-hand side from when you approach the Andrews Avenue from the Metropolitan Avenue, left-hand side. And what I would say, let me drop that. If in the proper condition, with watt of power, you can make the QSO with the second, with another continent. That we're not talking about something that is steady factor. We're talking about something that is temporary factor. Now, there is a unique device that was invented a long time ago, resonance circuitry. Do you think that based on the video that you saw and the evidence that they utilized the very old army receiver just to perceived the frequency of the signal that actually they were sending the power. That at resonant frequency, the loss of the power is as big as it is in the frequency that is directly not the resonant frequency, but it's close to that one. Back to you.
In that experiment of that 1 hour YouTube video that you suggested I look at, I think he found out that the transmitting coil resonated at something like 2.85 megacycles, and he went something like 1,000 or 2,000 feet away by the seashore and set up his battery-operated receiver, and he got a very clear tone at 2.85 megacycles on his CW Navy military receiver. The fact that he was only a couple of thousand feet away at 2.85 megacycles with the right kind of antenna, he could have been 1,000 miles away and still received a signal above threshold using the ionosphere on a good day. But he's using an extremely sensitive receiver, again with 120 decibels of gain. The actual amount of real power that got to that receiver compared to what was transmitted probably had 100 decibels of loss. And so if you and I were running a power company, Wesley, with that amount of loss, I don't think we're going to have the chance to make a profit. M2XJN, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Okay, M2XJN. My understanding is that the bridge in the resonance could collapse with very minimal amount of power that is applied for a long period of time. And at the same time, my understanding is that the overall losses in the frequency, the resonance frequency signal, and the amount of power that is delivered to the circuitry is much less. That means you don't need the high power when you have a resonant frequency, and from the other side you have a resonant frequency of the receiver, just to have that communication available, whether this is communication in regards to sending power, or this is a communication in regards to sending signal. Now, my understanding is that for many reasons, Tesla end up just with the Nobel Prize, but with no money. And the number of different inventors who claim that they built the devices, they actually end up the same way. By the way, there are at least 2,500 of patents right now in regards to the free energy device, especially based on using new magnet motors. Do you believe that all of these devices are hoax? Back to you, Dick, and to HJM.
Yeah, I think you're really asking, are they all a hoax? And of course, I'd be very foolish to say, yes, they're all a hoax. I can't say that. Of the ones that I've looked at so far, which are only partially documented, and the effects that I've seen demonstrated on those videos, I believe I have an explanation for what is being demonstrated, and I don't think extra resonant free energy was taking place. That's my belief. But I haven't actually touched the hardware, stood in the same room with the meters, and so on. I'd really want to do that before I go the next step of investing in these projects. So right now, I'm of the belief that no one has found this kind of excess free energy by way of strong local magnetic fields, neodymium magnets, and so on. I don't think excess energy. I think they see measurements that seem to be supplying excess energy. Let me drop. But I don't think there's real excess energy there. One of the explanations is the difference between true RMS current and voltage measurement versus average voltage and current measurements with an ordinary Dawson valve meter movement. And one of the experiments, that is a possible explanation for where the extra 20 or 30% of energy appeared to be coming from. supplemental things that we can buy. You and I can buy videos, we can buy kits, and in some cases we can buy components. And we can duplicate those pieces of hardware in our house, and using their kind of averaging meters, we will see what looks like a benefit. But if you now start building a great big one, put it in the basement of Astoria, Queens, and think that now I'm only going to be paying two-thirds of the amount of money to Con Edison, I'm very skeptical of that right now, Alex. I don't think... By the way, let me drop one more time. Resonance can do some real magic. Every antenna that you and I use that works well must resonate at the frequency of use in order to do a good job of transmitting. Resonance does produce a certain kind of magic. In the case of an IF can, where I've got a primary coil that gets resonated, a secondary coil that gets resonated, and the proper distance between the two, where I get the less than critical, critical, or overcritical coupling, I get a very nice energy flow with a very nice band pass. But that's energy flow across a distance of a quarter of an inch. If I want to send energy by way of a resonating coil on the transmitting end and a resonating coil on the receiving end and 10 miles of distance between the two, I'm having trouble believing that unless I make that resonating coil a couple of miles in diameter, I'm going to get a lot of loss over that circuit. In other words, I transmit a kilowatt and I only get a microwatt at the other end. And that's hard. That's a hard way to run a business. That's my belief right now, Wesley. N2XJM, K2LIW.
Well, N2XJM, I'm going to risk the statement. I'm very close to actually bid one. I have two concepts right now. One is the concept based on copper nut, who actually was building the passive device, no motion device, that is actually connected to the a pipe that is put into the earth, and using the spark is able actually to produce the energy. I have most of the documentation. I just want to make sure that I'm not making fool for myself. The other one is the device that I was referring to, and that device was made by Newman. And this appears to be repeated for at least 300 people. I'm right now in contact with another person from France, who actually is supposed to send me some additional papers in regards to his copy of the human model. So when I get this stuff, let me jump. I'm going to present one, and I'm going to go with that one working device to the club and present it if it works. If it not works, then I'm going to say to everybody it doesn't work. Back to you, Dagan, to exchange.
Wow. Okay. There's a man who's willing to put his money on the line. In another area that would be called took us up some tish. In other words, you're really committed. You're really putting the money on the table. So we'll find out. And sounds like Wesley is honest enough to tell us that even after he invests his money, if it doesn't work, he's going to let us know. At 11 o'clock, I'm going to switch over to the mailbag because, among many reasons, good old Bob, K2TV, gave me a copy of the advertisement for the Somer antenna. So we're going to be discussing that at 11 o'clock. So that's fascinating, Alex. The fact that you're going. Are you building all of the equipment yourself, or are you buying one of these kits from one of the guys who have had these advertisements for a couple of years? Which one did you choose, Wesley? N2XJM, K2LIW.
N2XJM for the net. Well, no kids. I don't believe in the people who wants to collect the money for their ideas. They go shortcuts. Even if one of these concepts is right, I would never believe that. have to understand is that in the time of crisis, we have artificial university. Instead of taking life of one person, doing 100 of experiments and building something, right now we have a situation where millions of people don't, around the world, they do not have a job. They are met, extremely met for every penny that they have to spend for anything. And they become attracted to these free energy devices. Let me drop. And what is happening, and I can say it, this is true. Let's say 2 months ago, there was a certain number of these devices. I was able to find out everyone and every clip and every information. Right now, impossible. From, let's say, 6, it goes to 6,000. Now, one person put something on a YouTube or on any one of these sites. 2 days later, there is 100 people around the world that is repeating and giving this information for free and say, I changed this, I changed that. Then a few days later, there is 1,000 people repeating this other concept, and they say, I did that, I did that. It is like ham radio operation. When people invest their own money for the pleasure of just doing what they think they like to do. And I believe that we have an enormous army right now of the people thinking about that. And the number of people that claim to be having a device successfully replicated is being investigated by other people who are who just want to know if they, from very much reputable websites, that this is true. So they're traveling even to another continent just to make sure that this is working. But to you, they can't understand.
I think I hear you. What you're saying is there's a lot of hungry people out there. As such, not all of them are honest, and it's not easy to select the wheat from the chaff. So the honest guys who have a good machine, and the dishonest guys who are just trying to collect money, you're saying, because there's so many of them now, it's kind of hard to select. So it sounds like you're going to be building your own. Okay, I'm going to switch over to the mailbag. One quick question before I do that. Eric, KE2EJ, are you available, Eric, for a quick question, K2RIW?
Yeah, I'm here, Dick.
Yeah, my digital multimeter, which I should have given up on, but I'm crazy. I've got an emotional attachment to this damn thing. I've had it for 10 years, and I want it to work again. If it was a Fluke brand name, I'd be in good shape. It's another quality brand, but a not well-known brand. Brand name is Tango Echo Sierra, TES-2500. TES-2500 digital multimeter, 4.5-digit true RMS meter. If anyone within the sound of my voice can find a schematic diagram for that, I'd be very happy. So, I know it's going to be difficult. I've put out the word on the microwave reflector, and I got not one single reply on that one. Back to you for any suggestion on that one, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW is going to have to write a check. I can see it coming.
Well, let me ask you the simple question. Have you bothered to open it up and take a look inside?
Oh, I've opened it up. I've looked inside. I've read off all the model numbers of every single integrated circuit and every individual transistor, looked up all those data sheets. It's got a multi-layer PC board, and the actual layout is difficult. It's got some of the DC voltage works. The AC voltage doesn't work. The ohms don't work. And by looking at the operational amplifiers, I can see some good things that look right and some things that don't look right. And do I have a bad op-amp? Do I have a bad true RMS calculating integrated circuit chip? With the schematic, I could easily confirm that. Without it, it's kind of difficult. So I've already put a couple of hours of study of what the eye can see when I opened it up and really took it apart. Over to you, Eric.
Is it subsurface mount, or is it, does it predate surface mount?
Predate surface mount. These are 14-pin, 8-pin and 14-pin ordinary integrated circuits soldered into the board. The main chip that does the digital display, that one's in a socket, and from all I can tell, that one's working correctly. The TrueRMS chip is an analog devices. Looks like it's a circular TO5 can with about 11 leads on it. That's going to be a pain to get out of there. The main op amp is a 8 or 10 lead thing. One or two other chips in there have got the 14 or 16 pins, dip-type dual inline. Go ahead.
All right. Well, you know, it depends upon how much patience you have. If I was really attached to something like that, I'd deal with it, you know, with it. With the appropriate vacuum and desoldering equipment, just taking chips out is not as big a deal, but I assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, you've done the Google search for the manufacturer and tried to get in contact with them, right?
Me and the 250 guys on the microwave reflector, TES brand name, seemed to be somewhat popular at the flea markets 10 or 15 years ago. They still exist as a company. They still exist. They still sell that model number. That's the good news. I just don't know any way to get a hold of the schematic. Go ahead.
Have you tried calling them directly or calling their service department?
Oh, well, that would be the direct approach. No, I haven't done that yet. And I guess it's time I do that. I presume they've got an American representative. I didn't check on that. I think it is a Southeast Asia brand. So, yeah, maybe I should try the direct approach. And if they charge me $10...
No, it's email.
Yep, I can do that too. Yep. And if they charge me $10 for a schematic, I guess I'd go for it.
I've done it in the past with these weird, even Chinese companies, and they'll even send you an English version.
Okay, so I think it's time I do some begging with email, and I think you're saying there's a 50-50 chance I'll get success.
Now, let's put it this way. It doesn't hurt to try, especially if you know where they are.
I'm gonna take your suggestion, and it's dumb that I haven't done that. Okay.
Like, read the directions before you use it, you know?
Oh. Yeah, I've read the owner's manual. There's no schematic in there, unfortunately.
No, I just meant that as most people don't bother to read the directions to this stuff, you know, call the people who know.
I hear you. Now, because the main rotary switch, which works between the front panel and the printed circuit board, boy, it's got a zillion contacts to it, because this thing's got it's got 40 modes of operation, so it's going to be a fairly complicated schematic. And it looks to me like it's a multi-layer board, and I think I did see it's a multi-layer board. Okay, I'm going to take the direct approach, call the manufacturer, or email them. Thank you for the suggestion. Mel, over to you for the mailbag. What kind of... Oh, and when it comes to the DJ, what the heck is that? DJ2 Uniform Tango. The Tango 50 antenna. I hold a data sheet in my hand that came out of the antenna book. K2, K-E-Y, K2-L-I-W.
You see, dual TMP standing by. Please rest, because I've had a lot of emails.
I just want to say hello. I know I spoke to K2KY, Mel, plenty of times on the other frequency.
Yeah, I'm going to pass it back to Mel right now. Well, Mel, unfortunately, the machine must be getting a lot of wind tonight, a lot of static crashes, and as you can tell, some of what you said didn't come through. Too bad you don't have a little more antenna or a little bit more power. I know the problem is that the machine has a null in its antenna pattern toward Frenchtown, New Jersey, and I think Manhattan Beach is in that general direction, so you're in one of the nulls of the antenna pattern, and that puts you at a disadvantage. Give it another try, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, I've raised the power up. How is that today?
You're 50% noise, but I'm going to be able to hear what you're saying, and I'm going to repeat your words. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've got a lot of static coming in on the repeater tonight. I am waiting with bated breath because I've gotten a lot of emails about this antenna. Is this the answer to everybody's problem who has antenna restrictions?
Okay, you've had a lot of emails on this antenna, and is it the answer to everyone's problem? Thank goodness that Bob, Kilo 2 Tango Victor, from Copenhagen, and that's the town where I was born, made a Xerox copy out of the 18th edition, I think it is, of the ARL. Yes, you could say ARL edition 18. A buddy of mine has the 20th edition, and the antenna is not there in the advertisements. So it was in the 18th edition. It's not in the 20th edition. I'm a little bit concerned about the fact that when we go to the website, we don't get a response, and the ad no longer seems to exist in later editions of the antenna book. But in the ad I'm looking at, let me drop. I see that beautiful curve that you've been describing to me for the last couple of weeks, where the left-hand side of the curve is 160 meters, and the right-hand side is 10 meters, and in between there's a nice graph of the Tango 25 and the Tango 50, and it seems to never get above 1.5 to 1 standing wave ratio.